Welcome to the Tearsheet Podcast, where we explore financial services together with an eye on technology, innovation, emerging models, and changing expectations. I'm Tearsheet Editor-in-Chief, Zach Miller. And today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Dee Chaubey, CEO of MoneyLion. In our chat, Dee takes us on a journey through MoneyLion's evolution, from its early days as a venture-backed neobank to its current position as a headline fintech stock. With a blend of insight and humor, he shares the company's shift from a growth-at-all-cost mindset to a more sustainable position focused on distribution, strategy, and morale. Through market ups and downs, Dee underscores the vital role of staying mission-driven and the focused dedication of MoneyLion's team to empower Americans with better financial tools and literacy. And looking ahead, Dee paints a vibrant picture of MoneyLion's future, where AI-driven search capabilities impact how consumers interact with their finances. MoneyLion isn't the same company it was when I first spoke with Dee almost 5 years ago, and since then, the company has acquired two businesses, which now function as an embedded banking product platform and an influencer content studio. So with a comprehensive product catalog, a dynamic consumer marketplace, and trendy media business capabilities, MoneyLion is poised to lead a change in reshaping the future of finance. So buckle up for an enlightening and entertaining conversation as we explore the past, present, and future of MoneyLion with the ever-insightful CEO, Dee Chaubey. Before we dive into today's episode, I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, Strawberry Frog. Strawberry Frog has been hailed as the very best in creative marketing, innovations, and transformation for financial brands worldwide. Working with iconic names like Morgan Stanley, Truist, First Abu Dhabi Bank, and many others, they've set the standard for excellence. I've particularly enjoyed covering the firm's ability to enact movements within these organizations that infuse their brands with real purpose that employees and customers can get behind. So whether you're a financial giant or a tech disruptor, Strawberry Frog is your go-to for activating brand purpose and driving transformative moments. Learn more about their groundbreaking work at strawberryfrog.com. Without further ado, let's hop into our podcast today. Great. So who are you and what do you do?
Hey, Zach. Thanks for having me. My name is Dee Chaubey. I'm the co-founder and CEO of MoneyLion, a leading publicly traded financial technology company that spans both a consumer proposition as well as through a pretty robust suite of APIs. We power the leading marketplaces across the internet as well.
Awesome. Welcome back to the show, I should say, Dee. I had to look it up before our call, but you were last on the podcast 4.5 years ago.
That's crazy.
That must seem like 100 years in internet time and neobanking time.
Yeah.
How has MoneyLion evolved over the past 4.5 years?
Yeah, look, I think the last time we spoke, Zach, right? And it's funny, 2019 is half a decade ago at this point. You know, we were primarily seen as a neobank, right? Mm-hmm. And we were building first direct-to-consumer lending capabilities. We built a robo-advisor on top of that. We built a leading wallet, right? So the entire ability to offer a debit card, two-day early paycheck. And that's really what we were known for in 2019.
And you were targeting middle Americans, if I remember correctly, too, right?
Middle Americans, yeah. Hardworking Americans, as we called mm-hmm. it, right? You know, we still are. The consumer business is still incredibly strong in the South, east of the country, the southern mm-hmm. part of the southern states, through our NASCAR sponsorship, which has been absolutely amazing. That really was successful. It propelled us in 2019 in the pandemic. We had a lot of success and we took the company public in 2021. And what we realized was we raised hundreds of millions of dollars of capital through going public. And what we didn't want to do was continue spending or at least participating in an arms race to acquire the incremental consumer for the neobank. Mm-hmm. You know, we really kind of had this introspection that, you know, we were first and foremost a data company. Mm-hmm. And then we were a technology company. We were really good at building together in one proprietary software stack, a bank, a lender, a robo-advisor. You know, mm-hmm. MoneyLion's a broker-dealer. We're registered with the SEC to be an RIA. We have the rails built out to, you know, crypto wallets. You know, we offer Bitcoin and Ethereum only. We don't do anything else. But again, for the hardworking American, we've always viewed that the access is important just so you can learn. So again, rounding up into Bitcoin, especially if you've been doing that for 3 years, you actually end up
pretty well
having that access, right? You've done amazing. So we were really good at building those individual pieces and putting in front of a consumer, the fireman, the teacher, the cop, the nurse, the gig economy worker in a delightful way. But we didn't want to go and start competing on the customer acquisition side with players that just were better funded than we were, right?
And probably race to the bottom, right?
Race to the bottom of pricing, right? And what we realized was that the consumer business generates a lot of insights for us. It generates a lot of consumer data for us, right? And we have been very strong on machine learning and artificial intelligence. I know it's been, since OpenAI over the last 18 months has kind of...
We haven't had a single podcast without mention of Gen AI.
But AI, we've been building artificial intelligence, machine learning primarily into our workflows since we started the business in 2013. In fact, my two co-founders, both of them were leading AI guys, and I convinced them to try to bring that into the direct-to-consumer consumer finance world. So from day one, the way that our systems have been built has been can we use everything we know about the consumer and offer the next best product, or can we use that to create less friction in the onboarding or in the workflow, even in payments and whenever you lend money, you have to collect the money as well, right? So can we make all of those parts of the value chain for the consumer better using some of these workflows? And then what we realized was, like, because we had so much data, we would rather be a premier marketplace where we can use that data to convince the consumer, help the consumer pick their next best financial product. Because every consumer has a bank account. They may have a 401k, they may have a mortgage, they may have a credit card, but it's really hard to pick the right one. And now with all the advancements that we're seeing in the data layer and the application layer, you can actually, use simple mathematics, machine learning, if you will, people like you capabilities, to actually get the right answer for that person at that moment in time, based on what's happening in their life. And you can deduce that from bank transactions. You can deduce that from, their utilities, their basket of subscriptions. So we realized that, so what we did was, and we said, like, we don't want to just be in the neobank space, right? We want to be in this marketplace space. So the decision point in front of us was, are we going to spend some of this capital that we just raised in the public markets to go build that out organically? Or are we going to find opportunities to leapfrog and do it faster by acquisitions, right? So it was a traditional build versus buy decision point that we had in 2021.
And you focus on both supply and demand, right? I mean, that was interesting how you bifurcated that.
Yeah, look, I mean, these are, again, if you think about first principles, right, there's millions of Americans that look for financial products all across the internet, right? So that is very, that's a long tail. There isn't that much concentration. Of course, you have the search engines, but you also have, Yahoo Finance, you have CNBC, you have Fortune, you have Forbes. Everyone is running SEO and SEM.
Bankrate.
And every Bankrate, right? Ventures is doing a great job. You've got Credit Karma, you got NerdWallet, you got, LendingTree, you got, 15 others that are building really interesting content, right? And that content's being produced every single day. So some of it is really good, but most of it is really bad, right? So we wanted to, we saw an opportunity to kind of leapfrog that strategy, where we wanted to have this CAC advantage, the customer acquisition cost advantage, by not having to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising on a stadium or buying traditional TV ads, but rather create a flywheel where the consumer business and this marketplace business really sit side by side to create synergies for both sides. So we had this opportunity to acquire Even Financial. We acquired that business in 2021. And that's been a game changer for us. You know, of course, we've taken that business and we've invested significant amount of, you know, human capital into that business to make it incredibly robust at this point. There are 1,000 B2B clients on that network, both on the supply and the demand side. So when we say supply, it's really consumers that want to it's basically companies that want to monetize their impressions. Mm-hmm. So if you're running a, you know,
these are publishers primarily. Yeah. Okay.
Publishers. Yeah. It could be, you know, it could be content sites. It could be the credit bureaus. It could be performance marketers. Anyone mm-hmm. who has impressions on their websites across the internet or their mobile apps that want to monetize those consumers can, with 5 lines of code, now embed a fully functioning financial services marketplace into their ecosystem. It could be a bank, right? I mean, there's 3,000 banks, 4,000 banks in America. Not all of them have a completion strategy. Mm-hmm. Some of them are really good at ag lending. Some of them are really good at commercial lending. Mm-hmm. They may not, but they still have consumers. They still have customers that may want a $50,000 personal loan, or they may want a $100,000 small business loan. They just don't provide that service on a first party basis, but they can still monetize that customer relationship by having a marketplace, right? So the technology that we have on our marketplace side is it's a reg tech technology. It's a compliance mm-hmm. technology. If a bank has a 5% rate on their CD or in their savings account, and that rate is being offered across 17 different websites, they don't want to have a one-to-many relationship where they're managing 17 relationships of what people are putting on their website. So they use our technology now to manage
for distribution.
That entire distribution, that entire mm-hmm. workflow, right? The compliance guy at the bank is now able to say, okay, an engine, here's my rate. And they are assured that that's exactly what's now seen across the internet. So, you know, that piece of technology now embedded across the Moneyline ecosystem, we eat our own dog food. Mm-hmm. So if you download the Moneyline app and you look at sort of the marketplace, it's exactly what could be taken through APIs and put into anyone's ecosystem. And and that's why, you know, when we get put into this neobank bucket, you know, if you talk to me in a year from now, if we are successful, I think it'll become really clear that we're not just a neobank, right? We're the premier marketplace first experience in fintech with an extremely robust suite of offerings. And whatever Moneyline is doing on a first party basis, we're now making available through significantly robust APIs for anyone to use, right? And that's really, you know, if we do that right, I think then we're building a enduring and durable business for the public markets.
Before we continue, I want to take a moment to reflect on the incredible work being done by our sponsor, Strawberry Frog. Strawberry Frog doesn't just talk the talk, they walk the walk when it comes to activating brand purposes effectively. Just look at their collaboration with SunTrust and the On Up movement they created. It's an excellent example of moving beyond lofty purpose statements to tangible, impactful action. But it's not just about external movements like On Up. Strawberry Frog also excels at internal culture shifts, as seen with brands like First Abu Dhabi Bank, SunTrust, Walmart, and Pandora. From theory to action, Strawberry Frog knows how to bridge the gap, ensuring that movements resonate authentically with both companies and their audiences. So if you're looking to make a real difference in your industry, consider partnering with Strawberry Frog. Visit strawberryfrog.com to learn more about how they're shaping the future of marketing and transformation. Now back to our show.
And so is that marketplace model, I guess, from where you're sitting, looking out into the future, I mean, it sounds like there's a significantly larger opportunity there than just a D2C classic neobank.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, I think the D2C neobank, look, and it can certainly be huge businesses. There are good examples of them out there. But if you're a bank, whether you're a virtual bank, a crypto bank, a neobank, or a physical bank, there are only mm-hmm. two ways to make money, right? You got to lend money or you got to provide advice for mm-hmm. asset management. On the lending side, you know, we really want to position Moneyline as a balance sheet light business because mm-hmm. you know, again, you have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, what are you really good at? Are we really good at, you know, going and getting billions of dollars of warehouse lending to write credit cards? Are we going to, you know, go raise that capital to do personal loans?
Right. Really kind of has to be in your DNA to be a lender, to do it well.
Yeah. And that's not us, right? But what we do, what we are very good at is we're really good at understanding when the consumer has ability to pay, skill to pay, willingness to pay. We can, you know, go into every single bureau and instantly, you know, do underwriting on those consumers. We are adept at fraud, right? I mean, anytime you're in the digital onboarding and acquisition space, fraud is a major concern. Mm-hmm. You know, many public and private fintechs, especially finance companies, are in the graveyards because they weren't able to figure out fraud. We have, right? That's the hard work that we have done. So we want to be able to do that interface layer, interacting with millions of consumers in high scale, and then passing off incredibly vetted leads and to people that are really built to have that balance sheet. They could be you can kind of look at our website and you'll see large banks, everyone from Citi and all the way down to the large fintechs all the way down. They are built. They have the apparatus. They have the sort of the sales teams, the securitization teams, the warehouse finance teams to go and build that balance sheet. And they're really good at that. And mm-hmm. we want to be good partners with them. And for the consumer, they want to start their journey with us because we are now connected with hundreds of different lenders. Right? I mean, it's and they're competing for the business of the consumer. So the consumer's always getting market discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going to a bank, if you come through us, you're at least as a from a consumer perspective, you know that you're getting the best rate. And now we're creating some membership products where we'll actually share some of the commissions that we're getting from the lenders back to the consumer, right? So therefore, if we take this to the natural conclusion a year from now, if we do this right, and we're not there yet, but if we do this right, it becomes irrational for a consumer not to get some of that commission back to them as cash mm-hmm. back, right? So that's how the consumer side, that's why you download the Moneyline app as a consumer and say, look, let me start my journey here. And if Moneyline's first party products, just like, you know, Amazon Basics or Costco's Kirkland products make sense for the consumer, great. But we are agnostic from a business model perspective because we're getting paid on the commission mm-hmm. from the third party products as well. And that's the same proposition I want to take to every single fintech, every single bank, and convince them. Because back in the day, if you're a financial institution, you looked at competition as look, in a negative way. I think the opportunity now with the way the technology has progressed is you can actually still generate revenue and profit from your own customers,
mm-hmm.
Taking products from other financial institutions, but still maintain the ability to send them an email. Hey, you know, we saw that you took a loan from Bank X or Fintech mm-hmm. Y. How did it go? We provide the capabilities for that bank to show third party accounts inside mm-hmm. of their ecosystem, right? So, I mean, again, this is this is why, you know, we just did a announcement with Ernst & Young that we're going to be partnering with them to take this capability to a lot of their banking partners, right? So again, and that's what they're seeing is like with one connectivity, you're getting compliance, you're getting mm-hmm. KYC, you're getting onboarding, and you're getting a completion strategy, right? So it's starting to work. I think one of the negatives. That one of the challenges that we have seen over the last year or two in the public markets is that, you know, we get a lot of flack for not understanding the business model because everyone still thinks of as that neobank that 2019 that you remember us from.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand what this enterprise business is and where we are in the arc of our kind of evolution and what we're trying to do to really kind of change the quality of revenues that we generate, right? And if, if we do that, that's it's gonna be a really interesting proposition.
I think you're right. I think there is an evolution of the story that's happening. You guys are ahead of the market in the sense of the market trying to catch up now and figure out who you are and what you do. So mm-hmm. you have the Even Financial acquisition, which is now Engine, and that's that financial product embedded marketplace. And then mm-hmm. the other side of the business, you have Malka, which is an influencer agency. Can you talk about that piece of the business and that acquisition?
Yeah. So look, I think if you go back to 2021, we sat there with the whiteboard and we said, look, what are we good at? What are we not? We've been working with this business Malka that they had studios in Jersey City and Los Angeles. We liked the people a lot. But really what they give us is this ability to tell our own stories, right? Mm-hmm. What we're realizing is on the consumer side, whether it's Gen Z, millennials, and even I think older millennials and Gen Xers are now adopting the form factor that the Gen Z mm-hmm. Segment is using. Everyone wants to consume any form of data in the same way that they consume an Instagram reel mm-hmm. or a TikTok feed. So financial literacy needs to, no one's going to go and read
a 12-page blog. Yeah, exactly. Blog. Yeah.
So what we have done is we've partnered with some of the best creators. There's a big vetting process, right? Because, as I said before, we are regulated, right? We're not allowing creators that are peddling a meme stock or, meme coin or an altcoin on our platform. So there's a little bit of moderation in our feed, but mm-hmm. it feels like a TikTok experience. You can comment, you can vote, you can have communities. You can talk about Tesla. You can talk about Microsoft. You can talk about Nvidia on Moneyline. You can trade those stocks through our through our active trading capability. So it feels like a community. Mm-hmm. But when we see that there are communities that are trending, we're now able to use our studio to actually go create, first party content. So, we partnered with, an NFL player, ex-NFL player, Brandon Copeland, to create a whole series around No Money, right? So this is, again, everything basic from, why it's incredibly silly not to, get 401k matches from your employer instead of being default off, you want to be default on, all the way to starting a business, tax hacks, how to optimize your taxes and everything in the middle, right? So we're now starting to get real traction in our ability to use some of those content creation capabilities. And again, we take the same philosophy as on the marketplace side. We want to use it, but anyone on our marketplace can pull that content and display it to their consumers wherever they are. In fact, we'll soon be showing that to the markets in terms of new clients that are just coming on to use your content mm-hmm. APIs. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is to own the storytelling capability in financial services and then offer the Malka capabilities the same way Moneyline uses it to the banks, to the fintechs, to the insurance companies, to be able to drive both financial literacy, product awareness, right? We call it the PMM function, product marketing managers, right? Mm-hmm. So in the future, you're not going to be able to convince consumers just by written content on your website about how a complicated insurance product works or how a wealth management product works. You want to show social proof. It needs to be bite-sized video format. So we're now able to go into large wealth managers, large investment banks, large insurance companies and say, you guys have had, decades of content that's sitting somewhere in a unoptimized way.
They have financial education and literacy, yeah, but it's way back in the website nobody goes to. Yeah.
Right. So now we talked about LLM before this call, right? So we can take all of their libraries. We can help them put it into an LLM engine. And then we can help them create that content feed for their consumers in a way that will take them years and millions of dollars of technology investment. But since we've already done it from the Moneyline side, we can now containerize it, make it into simple workflows for any of these institutions now to take their massive libraries of content and make that available in a TikTok or Instagram Reels-like feed, personalized, using some of the capabilities that we bring to the table for their customers. And that's now really interesting because we become the network operator, but also inside of the network, like a Facebook, right? So if you go buy ads on Facebook, they have a whole mm-hmm. team that helps you optimize those ads. with the creative, to what the subject mm-hmm. line needs to be, to what the color of the button needs to be, to what the CTA is. They'll show you 7 or 8 different variants of it, and they'll kind of predict that, you know, they'll simulate how those ads will do. We can now do something very similar for the financial services ecosystem, especially when they now are interacting on our network on the engine mm-hmm. side. That in a way works like a Facebook marketplace, mm-hmm. Where, you know, you'll see, you know, bank A, bank B, bank C, bank D, but, you know, if bank D wants to win that consumer, what can they do to their, the way that they show up? Now we can help, right? We can both help right when they see the screen, but also, with their SEO, their SEM, their blog, their feed and everything, right? So again, that becomes a, and then we can bundle that together as a platform fee mm-hmm. that generates our ability to say, okay, instead of, you know, this commission business that you're going to pay me on every single lead, why not change that? It's going to be better for you. But for us, we get recurring revenue for a longer period of time because we're not only offering them access to vetted consumers, and that's what we talked about earlier, about just our ability to vet these consumers, but also help you optimize your ability to dial up originations. But ultimately, we're offering the ability for financial institutions to acquire better quality, higher intent consumers for their financial products. And right. That's the game we're in right now.
Right. That API feed working with the Moneyline has its own flywheel effect for your clients, not just their Moneyline. That's interesting.
Exactly. And then we can go create more content. And then, you know, we're seeing examples where Malka's creating the content and, you know, Moneyline's not even the sponsor of that content. It's another participant on our network. Mm-hmm. But then we're showing that on Moneyline, we're showing it elsewhere. We're managing the YouTube feeds, so on mm-hmm. and so forth. So I think that's how it all kind of comes together. This strategy, you know, we haven't really been able to get that through to the markets. I think the equity research analysts know it. I think our top investors know it, but I don't think it's generally widely known by whether it's retail investors or kind of just generally in the industry. But I think that working together, that's the flywheel.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I mean, especially like as you look at mm-hmm. you recognizing that, you know, straight up competing for neobanking clients wasn't going to take you where you wanted to in the future. And these two other components, like you really had a view of an ecosystem, like which is different from, say, the way SoFi went about doing something, diversifying their business. And what I like about it is the flywheel within the Moneyline business, as well as offering an API that also has embedded within its own flywheel. How do you know if the strategy is working? Like, obviously, like maybe you can talk about some of the numbers. Like, what do you use KPI wise to show that, yes, that those three assets working together, there is that synergy that you were looking for?
Yeah, look, I think if you look at the total inquiries, you know, we had 205 million inquiries on the network in 2023.
Inquiry is a consumer coming and looking for a product?
Looking for a product mm-hmm. where we have a full lead, right? Like they've given us everything mm-hmm. in terms of every piece of data that's needed to be vetted for a financial product. And financial products have a higher bar than opening a Netflix account, right?
So, sure.
And that was up from 65 million the year before, right? So really good growth
over
rate.
3X. Yeah.
On that. So how do you do that? That means that you've got more supply, you've mm-hmm. got more demand. I think again, on the supply side, you know, why wouldn't you add these 5 lines of code into your website? Like, you know, there's very little upfront commitment to do it. Now we want to change that over time with more of these kind of platform fees where, you know, we lock in people with, you know, longer term deals. But right now, there is no cost to a publisher to add engine into their websites. The consumer business continues to do its own marketing. So think of the consumer business as its own publisher, right? Mm-hmm. So we're our own publisher.
Right.
And that business is also now generating a lot of eyeballs for the marketplace. And when Moneyline is a supplier, that's really where a lot of our growth is coming from, because when Moneyline is a supplier, we can do a lot more checks on the consumer, KYC, AML, BSA, link your bank accounts. So we know what their ability to pay, willingness to pay is. We also have the ability to pull credit right on our side. And then increasingly, our lenders are now hosting their decisioning with Moneyline as well, right? So the consumer is getting they're going really deep into the funnel with an approval, right? So they want to go through this process because we're now able to say, hey, here's a credit card that's been fully approved for you. You don't have to do any, no more checks are needed for you to get this credit card. Same thing with a personal loan. So, Moneyline is a supplier. That as a percentage of the total revenue pool is increasing. And that's what tells us that between that and the total inquiries that we're seeing, I think we're getting a lot of proof points that this is on the right track.
Got it.
The other thing I would say is, if you look at how much we spent on marketing in 2021 versus what we spent in 2023, it's about half, right? So that's been one of the big drivers for our path to profitability, positive adjusted EBITDA. And, what I would say is our adjusted EBITDA number is pretty close to cash flow. Our adjustments are, the main adjustments that we do to that is stock-based comp. At some point, in our evolution, because of the way we went public and, we were effectively a Series C, Series D company, that stock-based comp number comes down over time. So our adjusted EBITDA number, I know that there's been lots of memes and blogs and commentary on Twitter and X about adjusted EBITDA being an unclean number. But, we take a lot of pride that our adjusted EBITDA actually is very close to cash flow. So that's been one of the big success stories of 2023 is because we've been able to use this flywheel to reduce our marketing expense, we're now generating cash flow on a quarter-by-quarter basis.
So I'm just thinking back to that conversation in 2019. The business obviously has changed. You had these two acquisitions. How has running the company changed? How have you had to evolve as a leader over that time period?
Yeah, look, I think it's been night and day. In 2019, we were a venture-backed Series C business. I think we just done an $85 million Series C in 2019. The world was different. It was a zero interest rate environment. The expectation was continue growing 100-200%, keep burning, don't worry about the burn.
It was all about headline customer acquisition numbers, right?
At $150 million Series D. So, but it was really silly, right?
Looking back,
it would work for one or two folks, but in financial services, whenever you have that type of growth, it creates a lot of issues as well. But we were trying to grow a fintech like a social media business, right? And oftentimes these fintechs were required to kind of grow your DAO, your daily active users, your weekly active users, monthly active users at the same kind of benchmarks as a non kind of balance sheet consumer business. And for a couple of years, we convinced ourselves that we were able to do that. So we brought down the growth rate in 2020. 2020 was a really tough year in the beginning. Lots of life lessons, lots of lessons in terms of, who gets you from point A to point B and which team members get you from point B to point C. And it required a lot of hard decisions, right? The team, that we have today, maybe only 10% were here in 2019, right? So there's been kind of like a really changing of the team. 2020 was really interesting because, of course, the pandemic had its own tailwinds. But as a leader, I think that my personal journey has been really the maturity has come in just kind of like understanding this idea that you can't control everything. There is a force that's the market that's incredibly strong, and sometimes you just can't fight the tape. And 2022 was a really tough year. We were euphoric in 2021. The company had a massive valuation when it went public. It was supported by some of the best investors through our pipe. some of the best tech investors in the pipe. And then we saw, you know, a massive correction in that valuation. I think at one point the stock was down 90-95%. Wow. So it kind of, you know, it kind of went back to what, you know, I kept reading that Jeff Bezos letter that he had to his company in the early, in the late 90s, I think, or maybe early 2000s. And he wrote that, you know, our company is not the stock price. And he had a similar, Amazon at one point had also done the same thing. It lost 90-95% of its market cap. And kind of just, you know, what got us through it was a maniacal obsession with mission. And people who leave Moneyline to go to a hedge fund or go here and there, like they come back and they say, like, you know, that maniacal obsession with mission.
Yeah.
Right. Is what's missing. There's smart people everywhere. They're good, smart people everywhere. But I think that maniacal obsession with a mission.
What is the mission?
You know, the mission is to rewire the financial system, right? The mission is the vision is for us to be able to give every American the right tools to make their best financial decision. And, you know, the hardworking American, the teacher, the cop, the fireman, the gig economy worker who don't get tools that maybe you and I take for granted, the financial literacy, the education that you and I take for granted. And our ability to kind of put it all together when it works so beautifully, mm-hmm. That, you know, the people that work here want to now do that at a much larger scale. Right. So, we've got millions of users. I think it can be even bigger over time. And that's what excites, a lot of the great people that work here that I look out onto the floor here. You know, we've got some of the best young product managers, engineers that are working 80, 90 hours a week still, even as a public company, because they feel that this can be so much bigger than it is. And I think that if there's one thing that we as a leadership team have been able to do is we've been able to preserve this idea that Moneyline at one point, if done correctly, can be in the hands of 80, 90 million Americans. And that kind of big scale as an engineer and as a product manager allows you to kind of sometimes forget what's happening in, you know, the stock market, because it's always better to multiply your options by a larger number than a lower number, right? So we've had our days, and I think at one point the market cap had fallen below $100 million, right? Mm-hmm. And that creates lots of questions. You gotta answer your family. You gotta answer your friends. You know, every conversation is like, oh, don't hang in there, right? Like, yeah, thanks. We will. But if I was getting that, I knew that my employees were getting the exact same questions. Mm-hmm. You know, when you take the company public, everything is every day you get a report card at 4:30 mm-hmm. p.m. You have Q's and K's, all the things as a private company that you're able to kind of do in the boardroom or do kind of privately now has to be disclosed to the public shareholders, right? And, you know, the public markets react very differently. They sell the news and then they figure out if what's right and what's wrong, and then, you know, you have to recover mm-hmm. from that. But again, it's just kind of owning our destiny. The business model is working, so we're able to generate cash flow, and that's what's helped us kind of recover over the last 6 to 9 months. It's been good to see that. And we're nowhere near where we need to be, mm-hmm. but we needed to see this proof point just so those young engineers and product managers and
everyone that works out there, weeks. Yeah.
Well, they see that they're doing something right. They see that the mission's worth fighting for, right? Mm-hmm. So my role has moved from being much more tactical and execution oriented. Of course, mm-hmm. you have to do to much more focused on distribution, on strategy, on morale, on kind of like the vision and the mission. I think that's really what gets companies like this through a pretty existential period, a couple of years where. We had a lot more questions to answer than we had, you know, answers for, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that's really working at this point.
I'm sure you have the muscle memory going through such a crazy, you know, roller coaster of a couple of years that you've been through. It's really wild. We're getting near the end of our conversation, Dean, and I guess I want to ask you, I guess, a corollary to what you just said, like play that out. So, you know, if the goal is to get Moneyline in the hands of 80, 90 million Americans, What does the financial system look like? What does Moneyline look like? What are What are the expectations a few years down the road that somebody coming into the workplace and starts to coming into adulthood and needs a bank account? Like, what are their options at that point? I'm just kind of curious how you see the future of financial services in a way.
Yeah, look, I think the future is a lot with what's happening in the AI world right now, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the bank account transaction data, so the priors are in place, they belong to the consumer. The consumer can passport mm-hmm. what's happening in their credit card account, their investment account, their bank account, anywhere they want, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think what you'll see us really kind of pioneer is our search capability. So AI-driven search across all of your financial institutions. You can talk to Moneyline very soon and say, hey, what happened this day last year, this day 2 years ago? Simple things, of course, like PFM things, like where do I spend? Where are my subscriptions? But more importantly, what should I do next, right? No one's really been able to solve that.
Yeah, that's yeah. still the holy grail of the whole
system. Because we have the entire offer catalog now from the market, we know where rates are on a personal loan. We know what rates are on a CD, on an insurance quote. We know what the consumer's credit score is. We know how much they can pay every month for all of their financial products. So our ability, Moneyline's ability to actually offer at scale consumers the right financial basket, I think we're probably further ahead on that than most because we have the consumer in the marketplace sitting side by side. And, mm-hmm. I think the others, that if we do that right, that in itself, simple as it may sound, is a pretty unique offering, especially if done at scale with the right explanation, with the right wrappers around it, with the right context, personalization that we have through our media business. The capabilities that we have through our media business really changed the game for the 80 to 90 million Americans that self-identify as struggling with finances, right? So, these capabilities will always exist for the top 1-5% of society, right? But can we get this demystification further down where, the risk premium that Americans are paying to just access a bank account or just access, more expensive products. I think if we can help there, I think that's really the future of finance.
Dee, it's great catching up with you twice a decade. Yeah. Maybe we should do it a little bit more frequently, but I'm happy to hear about your evolution as a leader and the evolution mm-hmm. of Moneyline as a business. And thanks for joining us on the Tearsheet podcast today.
Zach, thanks for having me. This is awesome.